Good morning and welcome to EamonMalley.com. My guest this morning is Henry McLeish, the former First Minister of Scotland. He's in Northern Ireland taking part in the so-called Justice Series. This is basically an attempt to try and reform prison service here and to ameliorate the lot of the prisoner vis-a-vis the society. But there are a lot of things about which I want to speak with Henry McLeish. He's very cognizant of the turmoil in Rangers right now and of what's going on in football in Scotland. But, of course, the big issue, I suppose, the big topical issue in Scotland, apart from Rangers at this point in time, is the whole question of Scottish independence. And I keep asking myself, how in the name of God has Alex Salmond managed to steal your clothes in the Labour Party and, in fact, in every party in your country?
Great question. I think it started 5 years ago when he won in 2007. He became a minority government. He had gone from a cause to a party of government in a very few number of years. And of course, now he's a majority government. And the important point is he has a vision. He has a set of values. He's got a mission. He wants to see Scotland independent. And what has happened in the interim is that the Labour Party in particular has really lost the plot as far as the constitutional question is concerned. There are changes now, new leader in Scotland. I think we can see something different. But this has been a situation where Alex Salmond has quite simply just wiped the floor with all the political parties, a phenomenal rise in his power, a phenomenal rise in his party's power. And of course, we're now looking towards a referendum soon on the future of the country.
Mr. McLeish, what has this man got? Why is this man obsessing Downing Street at this point in time? What is it about this guy?
Well, I think the greatest accolade was given by David Cameron a few weeks ago when he had his Tom Hanks moment about when he said, Westminster, we have a problem. And it was a realisation for the first time in this five wasted years for the unionist parties that they had an issue that Alex Salmond was running with. Now, what he's got is that he's a shrewd politician. He's an economist by trade. He has a vision for the country. He's tough. He's resolute. He can provide a lot of gravitas in a situation where devolved Scotland has maybe lacked that. So all in all, a powerful advocate of change, powerful advocate of independence. But at the end of the day, this has been helped by an ineffective opposition over the last 5 years. This is what I'm hoping will change.
Coming from where you come, why do you sound so sympathetic and empathetic with this man?
I think if you're out of elected politics, you know, you've got to give credit where it's due. And quite frankly, I'm a strong member of the Labour Party.
Isn't that a scandal that you say when you're out of elected politics, you give credit where credit is due? Isn't that the curse of opposition?
Of course it is.
Isn't it?
Of course. That's what I'm saying. You know, you don't need to be Albert Einstein to realise that politics is far too tribal here and in Scotland. Politics is all about never having to say that you're wrong. But when you come out of it, you can see people for what they are. Now, to be fair to Alex Salmond, he has all those qualities. He's taken a party from a cause and a campaign in a very few years to be a majority party of government. And here's the rub, Eamon. This was in a situation where we had PR. This was not supposed to happen. That said, I can see changes in the unionist parties now. They know they have a fight on their hands, and thankfully they're now beginning to take place in a more effective opposition.
If there was one sentence or word which you could call up to summarise, how did he outmanoeuvre the rest?
Well, in 1999, when we set up the Parliament, I think we were too busy governing. For the next 8 years, we were in coalition government with the Lib Dems. But we forgot there was a party out there that was gaining ground. We forgot there was a Scotland that was changing. And if there's one issue above all, it's the whole question of identity politics. The Labour Party, the Conservatives, have never been involved in identity politics. With devolution, that's what we're seeing. And Alex Salmond has taken that issue and run with it.
I've been listening very carefully to what this man is saying. He's speaking a language which is tantamount, in my way of thinking, to expropriating the wealth of what was known as the United Kingdom and repatriating that wealth after paying off his debts to London. Is that a fair assessment of how he speaks?
It's not. I don't think it's a fair assessment, because essentially what he's saying is that, look, the union has in its current form has been there since 1707. He now wants to give Scotland independence. But it's an interesting independence because we'll still have the Queen as the head of state. But leaving that aside, I think what he wants to then say is, look, we want full fiscal autonomy. That's what independence will mean. That will mean looking at the resources of Scotland, including North Sea oil, and in terms of international agreements. But what he's also saying, I think, that he just believes, apart from the economic question, that Scotland can handle itself independently. It could do a better job, realise some of the goals that we have. And also what he's saying is a statement about the union. I don't share independence. I don't want to be independent. But on the other hand, what I can see is this. The union is tired. The union is dated. The union is not fit for purpose. There's a grudge and grievance at the heart of the union, even towards Northern Ireland, even towards Wales, even towards Scotland. So what we need is transformation of the union's attitude, but at the same time, Alex Salmond will try to get Scotland to leave the union.
Henry McLeish, you're in Northern Ireland today. If you're a unionist sitting in Northern Ireland, if you're Peter Robertson, should you be preoccupied about the direction of travel of Alex Salmond?
No, I wouldn't, because I think, in a sense, self-determination, as it were, is for every part of the United Kingdom, including Northern Ireland. Different circumstances, different timeline, different experiences. They're at a point in time where the solution might be different. But obviously, Wales now wants to move forward. It's looking for more legislative powers. Scotland is moving forward. And regardless of whether we're independent or not, and I don't want to be independent, we're going to have more powers. So Northern Ireland will have to look at this carefully and see whether, in the context of this, it wants more powers. What do the Northern Ireland people think? Does he want more economic powers, more financial powers? Does he want more of the powers reserved at Westminster given to Northern Ireland? It's a matter for the Northern Irish.
You know that we're pursuing very, very cogently the whole argument about a derogation on corporation tax here. In other words, we want to break away from the uniformity of corporation tax within the rest of the UK. Now, we're given to understand that Salmond is the man who is the fly in the ointment, that he is standing firmly and arguing if Northern Ireland's going to be prioritised, then the rest of us have to get a slice of the action. Is that correct? Is that the right way to go about it?
There's two things. I think one, corporation tax is something Alex Salmond wants given to Scotland. But secondly, it's going to get caught up in the bigger question of independence. But there's another side to the question of corporation tax. It's okay to reduce taxes, but at a time of austerity, where is the money going to come from to pay for some of the areas that you won't have enough money for? So it's a big issue. A lot of people are talking about it. Alex Salmond wants it at the focus. But at the end of the day, please remember that if you take a tax, reduce the income from it, you have to then find the income elsewhere to keep your level of services up.
Let me ask you something. Will Labour go with Scottish independence? Will emotion win over at the end of the day? If David Cameron can't get this vote, this referendum in the short term, is Westminster snookered?
The debate, the date for me will be 2014. I think Alex Salmond will win on that. As far as the other parties are concerned, as I don't support devolution, and I believe that independence, the vast majority of Scots don't share independence either. But what we will see is more powers being given. But look, it's a straight question.
Are we talking about Devo Max then?
The first question is independence. It'll be an up and down, as they say in American Congress, on that. I believe independence will fail. But at that point, I would like a question about where we go for that. And they're talking about Devo plus Devo Max. It's about Devo diversity. It's about saying, look, we don't want to leave the UK, but what we do want is more powers, financial and economic, and we want more the reserve powers to come to Scotland. That, to me, is healthy. We are a nation. We should look forward. And quite frankly, it's the best way of keeping Scotland in the union. And David Cameron doesn't quite realise that yet, but he should.
Henry, it's a fascinating debate. I mean, given our history and the history of the Irish Republic and the De Valera era, et cetera, is one which we will watch very closely from a distance. Now, you're here to talk about prison reform based on your experience. You were in the chair in 2007 when you examined the whole prison situation in Scotland. Now, our stats are alarming here when it comes to costs, manpower, resources ploughed into prisons, and still our problems obtain. What are you going to be bringing to our thought process or our table today in terms of your way of thinking?
Well, one of the encouraging points, first before I deal with this point you've raised, is that if you look at the number of people incarcerated in Northern Ireland relative to Scotland, we actually incarcerate per 100,000 people 60% more than Northern Ireland do. So therefore, that's a plus point for you, that you're putting less people in prison. That said, if you look at the cost of a prisoner in Scotland, it's about £43,000 per year to house a prisoner. I think in Ireland, that figure may be heading up towards double that. That seems a large amount.
I remind you, in Northern Ireland,
In Northern Ireland, my apologies. The other point is that when you look at the prison population, we're nearly 8,000, coming down mercifully. You're about 1,600, 1,800. In that sense, it seems that what you've got to look at carefully is the ratio of prison officers to the number of prisoners you had. And again, in Scotland, we have much fewer in terms of the ratios. That said, though, the big issue, whether it's Northern Ireland or whether it's in Scotland, is the fact that for a large number of people, they shouldn't be in prison. We worked on the principle that for a lot of crimes, a lot of crimes that often get 3 months or 6 month sentences, we argued in Scotland successfully that there should be an assumption made that they should not go to custodial sentences, they should be dealt with in the community.
Aren't you really talking, though, like an old lefty, like a Lord Longford? Isn't that really how you're coming across when you start talking like that? And aren't you immediately putting yourself in the firing line when you speak like that?
Being described as an old left, I think I quite enjoy, actually. I haven't heard that much. No, that said, look, we live in a period of austerity. What we've got to make sure is the prison service not only adds value to the prisoners it deal with in terms of their rehabilitation, but it's also value for money. It's also about making sure we get a return on investment. But the other point is this. Short sentences simply don't work. We proved that in Scotland, and the government went so far as to now have a presumption that no one will be sent to prison for less than 3 months, which is important. That means that what you have is a prison service that caters for people who are violent prisoners and a problem for the public interest. You keep people out who can be treated in the community, and at the end of the day, you get better value for money on return for the taxpayer.
Mr. McLeish, fact. To keep a prisoner in jail in Scotland costs you, say, 43,000. It costs 70,000 plus here. We have one prison officer for practically every prisoner in Northern Ireland. Fact. We have a service deemed by Anne Orrs to be homogeneously unionist, Protestant, loyalist in terms of the makeup, the composition of the prison staff. Now, her recommendation is that must be broken up. We now hear of a pot of something like £60 million being made available to facilitate, to afford an exit for so-called disgruntled prison staff. Are we mad in this era of austerity to be putting a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for these people to exit and then possibly take up jobs as security staff at Parliament buildings or elsewhere within government structures?
I'm sure part of the purpose of the review, which was published last year, was to tackle some of these outstanding issues. But I think the public of Northern Ireland would agree with the public in Scotland that, you know, you need value for money. We do live in a time of austerity. Every pound should be stretched to the maximum. And of course, the public also want to feel safe in their homes, safe in their communities. Against that background, it's up to the politicians, of course, in Northern Ireland, not for me to lecture them about how they spend their money. But clearly there's evidence elsewhere of good practice that can be looked at in Northern Ireland. But at the end of the day, the public are concerned about crime. They are concerned that people are punished, but there are other ways of doing it. And whether you describe as a lefty on this issue, there is a sane view to look at which not only provides value for money, but actually makes sure that people don't keep going back and back and back again into prison. The revolving door has got to be stopped.
Is that an argument, though, for paying these guys off, to get them, these so-called disgruntled prison officers, get them off the scene and reform the prison service?
Well, clearly, there is a different set of circumstances pertaining in Northern Ireland because of the troubles over the last decades that we don't have. But obviously, it is an issue of managing your resources. Look, the other problem is that prison officers are a valuable part of what we're doing. We must try and retain the best. There must be outcomes that help the public. And at the end of the day, it's very much a Northern Ireland problem. All I can say is look elsewhere because there are solutions which can not be shipped entirely to another jurisdiction, but actually can be of help.
The great white hope came over the hill in the person of Colin McConnell to reform, to rescue the prison service here, to bring it into the 21st, 22nd century. What happened? You guys have stolen them. You've taken them back to Scotland now to give them a higher job. Have you any sense of guilt?
Scots always live with a sense of guilt. You know, it's about Calvinism and Catholicism joined together. No, that's a matter for him.
What a hopeless mix that is.
Well, indeed. But at the end of the day, this is a matter for the prison service. Obviously, he's returned back to Scotland. That said, I think that if you look at some of the reviews that you've got underway, you look at some of the ideas that Northern Ireland have got, I've no doubt in a few years' time we'll see the real benefits of this review.
Well, you've got Scottish independence a problem there. You've got other problems on the horizon in Scotland. But is there football in Scotland? Can there be football in Scotland without Rangers? You're a man who's very familiar with football. You've been looking at reforms over the years. Can there be football? Can there be a genuine league in Scotland without Rangers?
Well, I think to put it into context, there was a famous Liverpool manager, Mr. Shankly, when I was asked about football, whether it was more important than whether it was life or death, and he said it was more important than that. Scotland's a bit like that. We love our football. And at the end of the day, Rangers, I hope, will survive. It's not only important for the 50,000 fans who believe they are really a cause, they're part of their way of life, but it's also important for the Old Firm. And it's also important for Scottish football overall. We need a strong Rangers at the heart of Scottish football. I hope, sincerely hope, that will be achieved.
Why can the Old Firm, as you call it, why can those guys not see this? Why are they so vitriolic?
Well, you know, there's a great deal of tribalism about football. There's a great deal of history. There's a great deal of causes to be won and lost. But at the end of the day, we need Rangers and Celtic. They're important to us. They're global clubs with a global fan base. So at the end of the day, I believe that we'll move forward. And there's changes in football taking place, but changes in football are a bit like changes in the prison service. It's all about institutions. It's all about history. It's all about looking to a future that they've got to grasp with both hands. I think that's happening in Scotland, and I'm delighted that is the case.
Strong opinions there from Henry McLeish, the former First Minister of Scotland. As you will have realised, having listened to the programme, a wide range of opinion and refreshing to hear ideas from outside. Good morning to you, Henry, and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.